circle, it would make an oval.
That's true, too. Very well. It's good to see you. There's a lot of you here. That's really nice. That's really wonderful. I don't know if anybody knows this book, but this is called When I First Came to This Land. It's a very nice book. It's a story. It actually started as a folk song. It was sung by German immigrants to this country. It's been retold by Harriet Seifert, and she dedicates it in memory of my grandparents who came here from Russia. And then the illustrator says it's for Leon. I don't know where Leon came from, but one thing we can be sure of is everybody has to have come from someplace.
I came from China.
There you go, you came from China. Anybody else? From where? Came from your mommy. Very accurate kid. Anybody else know where your family came from before they lived in this country? Also from China?
Uh-huh. Well, there, you can tell.
Where?
Washington.
Another part of Washington. Okay.
Lithuania.
Lithuania.
Wow.
That's where the Strumskys are from. I did not know that. It's the first I've heard of that. We probably don't know a lot of these things about each other. But here's the start of the story. When I first came to this land, I was not a wealthy man. You can see he's got patches on his clothes and a beat-up old suitcase. But he's trying to look good. You can kind of always see newcomers in the places where I fish, because sometimes you'll see men wearing sport coats. And you kind of have a feeling they come from another country if they're fishing in a sport coat. But the land was sweet and good, and I did what I could. That land does look sweet. It's going on a train, going out west. I bought a farm, and I called my farm Muscle in My Arm. God, they use a lot of muscle. I wonder if he knows anything about farming. You know, a lot of people who came here came because their families didn't have any land. I borrowed a plow. I called my plow Don't Know How. I called my farm Muscle in My Arm. It's going to take a lot of muscle, especially when you don't know how. But he's going to try. I bought a horse. I called my horse, I'm the boss. You can see who the boss is by what's happening with the horse. Knocking everything over. I called my plow, don't know how. I called my farm, Muscle in My Arm. Yeah. I built a shack. I called my shack, Break My Back. Look at him, he's up there on a long ladder falling. Hope he didn't get hurt too bad.
He broke his back.
I called my shack, Break My Back. I called my horse, I'm the boss. I called my plow, Don't Know How. And I called my farm, Muscle in My Arm. Calluses on his hands, too. I bought a cow. I called my cow, No Milk Now. I called my shack, Break My Back. I called my horse, I'm the boss. I called my plow, Don't Know How. I called my Muscle in My Arm. Sometimes that's all you got, especially when you don't have the language. You can't make your living other ways. I bought a pig. I called my pig Too Darn Big. You know how big that pig is. He didn't know it. They probably weren't that big back in his country. I called my cow No Milk Now. I called my shack Break My Back. I called my horse I'm the Boss. I called my plow Don't Know How. And I called my farm Muscle in My Arm. Yes?
What do you call a cow when it gives milk?
I don't know. Plenty for now, maybe. We'll have to find out. I found a wife. I don't know if she came from the other country. She came from this country. Came from a different country altogether. I don't know. She looks pretty happy. She looks like she's ready to fool with this guy. He seems like he's kind of fun. He seems like he's somebody who'll give it a try. I call my wife Spice of My Life. I called my pig Too Darn Big. I called my cow No Milk Now. I called my shack Break My Back. I called my horse I'm the Boss. I called my plow Don't Know How. And I called my farm
Muscle in My Arm.
Muscle in My Arm. Right. I had a son. I called my son So Much Fun. I used to read this to my son, and I would say, I called my son too much fun. He was little. I called my wife spice of my life. I called my pig too darn big. I called my cow no milk now. I called my shack break my back. I called my horse I'm the boss. I called my plow don't know how. And I called my farm
muscle in my arm.
My son found a duck.
Oh my God.
Pretty big duck, huh? That looks like a saddle duck. He's riding that. He called his duck, 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 duck. And he called his pa, da, da, da. And he called his ma, 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 ma. It takes you a while to get the language figured out, even if you're born here. When I first came to this land, I was not a wealthy man. But the land was sweet and good. And I did what I could. And that's the end of the story. How about that? So, it's a beautiful day.
What's the title of the book?
The title of the book is When I First Came to This Land.
What land?
This land, right here. Richland, Washington. Basco, Washington. Kennewick, Washington. Right around here somewhere. Well, let's rise in body or spirit and sing our kids out.
Go now in peace, go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you.
Good morning. It's such a golden week. Such a golden week throughout the Northwest. I guess it's getting pretty cold in the Midwest already. I think it was down in the 20s in Iowa this morning. Been some winter snow. So that's the weather report. But I need to check in about something else. I'm going to be referring often in my sermon and my reading today to Microsoft Word and the red and green squiggly lines. Does everybody pretty much know what those are? Okay, yeah, I see Apple users who only use Apple Works out there. If you have a grammar problem, Microsoft Word will put a green squiggly line and suggest to you something else you could do with that sentence. If you have a spelling problem, Microsoft will put a red squiggly line, and then you are in trouble. You are definitely in trouble, okay? So I was taking a risk with this sermon, knowing that not everyone might have the background information they need. But here we go. Now that you know that, here's some news clippings from a story that broke in January this year. Four Connecticut cops were busted Tuesday morning by the FBI in a sweeping probe of civil rights violations involving the East Haven police. The grammar cop in my Microsoft Word program put a green squiggly grammar warning under this sentence, suggesting below that it would be better to mention the FBI right at the beginning. Four cops or FBI first. I could go either way. I didn't write it, so no skin off my nose, Microsoft. The quartet of suspects were arrested shortly before sunrise on charges of conspiracy and obstruction of justice, authorities said. Microsoft suggests here that saying the quartet of suspects was arrested would be better. That's true. Quartet is singular, a single group of four. Two were arrested at East Haven Police Headquarters while working the midnight shift, while the other two were taken into custody at their homes. My word processor was fine with that. According to court papers, the four officers were responsible for unreasonable searches and seizures, used unreasonable force, and hid their flagrant behavior. Officers David Carey, Dennis Spaulding, and Jason Zillo, along with Sergeant John Miller, were due in federal court in Bridgeport, Connecticut, later Tuesday. Microsoft liked the name Spaulding and Miller just fine, but put the dreaded red squiggly line of misspelling under the names Carey and Zillo. The East Haven mayor was quick to defend the four men, and Miller's attorney proclaimed his client's innocence. John Miller is a hero in East Haven, said lawyer Donald Cretella. He's decorated. He's a wonderful family man. Hopefully we'll clear his name. Last month, the U.S. Department of Justice released a 23-page report ripping the East Haven police as profoundly broken by a pattern of discrimination, particularly against Latinos. But East Haven Mayor Joseph Maturo said he backed the arrested officers. The foursome are innocent until proven guilty, he told the Hartford Courant. We stand behind our officers and the police department. It's a tough day for all in East Haven. East Haven, Hartford, and even that suspiciously French-sounding Courant. These words were all approved by Microsoft Word. But Cretella and Maturo got redlined, as did the word Latinos at first, although it disappeared when I clicked the little book and pencil icon for clarification. Clearly, some proper names seem to fit the program without difficulty, while others trigger an electronic version of suspicion that they are somehow wrong or don't belong. So what's going on here? Let's try to sort this out after we sing again with our guest, Joseph DeMasi. I was going to introduce Joe a little bit, but you have an excellent introduction here in your order of service. I don't want to repeat that information. I just want to say that Joseph is an Italian-American. He's 58 years old. He has a white beard, a receding hairline, and he and I have nothing in common. Thanks, Joe. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Well, there's a very pleasant Italian-American. We're back to that unpleasant one, though. Mayor Maturo's words that I read you before made a bad situation worse when he was questioned about what he planned to do to mend relations with the Latino community following those allegations of police harassment and abuse that included beating handcuffed suspects, searching businesses at random, and smashing one man's head into the wall. Here's what I said. I might have tacos when I go home. So what he's going to do to reach out to the Latino community. I might have tacos when I go home. I'm not sure yet, he told reporter Mario Diaz in a video that has gone viral online. Diaz countered, "You realize that isn't the comment to say right now?" The mayor seemingly backtracked, insisting, "I might have spaghetti tonight, being of Italian descent. I've had ethnic food. And when you ask me what I was going to do tonight, I may go out and have a Latino dinner in the Latino community." There's nothing wrong with that. And you can twist it and turn it whichever way the press decides to do. Twisting? Doesn't sound to me like it was the press doing the twisting and turning here. A Latino dinner in the Latino community? Please. The mayor's words are starting to sound like fusilli or girandole or one of the other squiggly twisted pasta varieties that also fall under Microsoft Word's squiggles of suspicion when you type them out, as do the names Cari, Cillo, Cretella, and Maturo. Columbus Day is tomorrow, so don't be shy. What kind of names do you think these are? Go ahead, don't be shy. They're Italian. They're Italian in origin. You may have heard that following his insensitive statements about another immigrant community, activists, including my colleague, the Reverend Kathleen Matigue, had more than 2,000 tacos delivered to Mayor Maturo's office. Most of those were later sent to soup kitchens, but one was left as a gift to the mayor, who has now also acquired a new nickname, Taco Joe Maturo. Chances are, though, that this is at least the mayor's second nickname. Many, if not most, Italian surnames begin as nicknames. Some of these may have begun with hereditary professions like tagliabue, ox cutter. Some might have started with insults like
Malatesta, bad head. Or Pelagatti, cat skinner. The name Maturo, though, may have originated in a compliment. It means mature, which may sound a bit ironic after Taco Joe's fall from grace due to his childish comments. It might have been first applied to an ancestor who seemed mature beyond his years. Many names have to do also with people's real or supposed origins. Names like Da Vinci, meaning from the town of Vinci. Franco, French. Or Grieco, Greek. My own name, Moro, with which Microsoft Word has no problems, might be derived from foreign origins or insults, or maybe both. To understand, let's go back in time a little. Or maybe we need to go back a lot. My father's family comes from southern Italy, a town near Naples called Acerra. Acerra is the name for a type of Roman sacrificial incense box that had legs. It was like a mini altar on which you would burn incense and perfumes during pagan funeral rites. Its original inhabitants in Acerra, an ethnic group called the Osci, called the town Aceru. In 332 BC, the Romans granted its residents the status of civitas sine suffragio, citizenship without the vote, a form of partial or lesser citizenship with which, as minority members, they were expected to be content. The African leader Hannibal, who had crossed Spain and the Alps to attack Rome with his war elephants, destroyed Acerra in 210 BC. It was rebuilt by 204 BC and later became part of the Byzantine Eastern Roman Empire with its capital in Constantinople, called Istanbul today. It remained part of Byzantium long into Christian times. Then in 826 AD, the invading Lombards, a Germanic tribe, built a fortress there trying to secure their conquests on the Italian peninsula. The Lombards were Arian Christians who denied that Jesus and God were co-eternal and co-equal and more or less the same, which was heresy to other Christians. That's Arian with an I, by the way, after an Egyptian teacher named Arius, and has no connection to Arian with a Y that Nazis like to use. The Lombards left traces of Arian doctrine in southern Italy that would later influence the Socinian religious movement in Poland, then spread to the first Unitarians in Transylvania, and eventually reach England and the U.S. After the Lombards, Muslim invaders coming inland from the Mediterranean overran Acerra. My family name, Moro, means Muslim. This might indicate some ethnic connection with the invaders or with people who came later from nearby Lucera, which was home to over 20,000 Muslim inhabitants until the year 1300, when the Pope declared the first Christian year of Jubilee, promising to remove the sins of all who came on pilgrimage to Rome. Well, the Prince of Naples joined in that celebration by having the Muslim inhabitants of Lucera massacred and all their property seized, gifted to the Holy Father. Some survivors fled the area, eventually becoming Christians themselves, but possibly carrying a trace of their origins in family names like Africano, Saraceno, and even Moro. It could even be that the name started as an insult directed at a dark-complexioned ancestor by a blonde cousin who happened to look more like the fair-skinned Norman invaders who later came and ruled Acerra, while also adding some Viking traces to that local gene pool. Whatever its origins, by the start of the 20th century, my family in Acerra, like so many others in Italy, was landless. Voteless in Roman times, insecure through a series of invasions, and now without property, they would buy fruit and fish by the sea down in Naples, bring them back on horse and donkey back to sell near home. When they saw a chance to come to this land, they took it. The men came first. They did what they could, living by the muscle in their arms, breaking their backs to sleep in broken-down shacks or in city tenements, while doing things like farm labor and construction as they saved money to bring their families over. And they cut a lot of hair, red, brown, black, blonde. Some were deported as illegal aliens more than once. You can find the records, the Ellis Island records. But they kept coming back. And so, here I am today. Hi. Here I am today, where I'll stop with this history. Though, of course, there's a lot more to say. Quite some story. But how different is it than the story of Joe Maturo's family? Some Maturos also came from the Naples area, from towns that must have an ancient past as rich as Acerra's and a recent past just as poor. And how different is it really from your story? Everyone really is from a place like Acerra. Old, layered, cross-hatched with movements of peoples and individuals coming to find something, escape something, take something, and yes, always leave something of themselves behind before going someplace else. Some of our ancestors lived under the rule of an empire that kept extensive written records, and others did not. But with or without such details, all of us have quite some story to tell. All we need is for someone to listen to it. Then it comes out. We need to fit our stories together if we want to fit ourselves together. You can feel something in Taco Joe's words as he tries to explain to Mario Diaz what he meant by saying, "I might have tacos when I go home. I might have spaghetti tonight, being of Italian descent. I've had ethnic food. And when you ask me what I was doing tonight, I may go out and have a Latino dinner in the Latino community. There's nothing wrong with that. And you can twist it and turn it whichever way the press decides to do." This tells me that he wants to tell a story. He wants to say something about his own immigrant past and to connect it with the reporters. He wants to connect tacos and spaghetti and make this whole exchange taste better. But his words are still too bitter. Maybe that comes from a time when his own family was needed for their labor in agriculture, construction, coal mines. Needed, but not wanted by many of their neighbors, who considered such newcomers to be non-white and therefore undesirable. Maybe no one wanted to hear the Maturo story when they first came to this land, told in broken English. But do you think that maybe someone named Mario Diaz could relate to it? Which brings me to a very important religious question. This is a sermon, so I need to ask those. What's your favorite kind of tacos?
Fish.
Fish? Fish? Which one?
Carne asada.
Carne asada, okay. Cabeza. Okay, I like that too. I'm going to talk now. Me, I like the taco truck kind. Too. That's another way of classifying. Small, two soft tortillas, no cheese, just some meat or fish and onions, a little lettuce. I like to get three. One that's lengua, that's tongue.
Oh, I like that.
You like that too, okay. One cabeza, that meat from the head, and one with tripas, intestines, which I always enjoy so long as I don't have to smell it cooking. I like tacos. But Microsoft Word did not like some of those words when I was typing them. Taco and tortilla were fine, while lengua, cabeza, and tripas got the red squiggly line. But it's time for the next important question. What's your favorite kind of spaghetti? Which one?
Meat sauce.
Meat sauce. Putanesca. Any others?
Pesto.
Pesto. I never tasted northern Italian food until I was 30.
So, clam sauce.
Clam sauce. Now that we had vongole. That we had all the
sausage.
Time. Sausage. Well, I got to admit, I kind of like a simple marinara sauce on mine, but I'm really also fond of basil pesto. Then there's a preparation you'll never find in restaurants that's called amudicata, made with breadcrumbs, red chilies, anchovies, and olive oils. It's just fantastic. It kind of makes a sauce. It's a little dry, but it kind of makes a sauce in your mouth.
That's
Sicilian. Sicilian, right. Uh-oh. Microsoft doesn't like amudicata, apparently. But I see that it has no problem with marinara or pesto. Why is that? Is it because those foods have found a place in our language? Just like these words have found a place in our language, just like these foods have found a place at our tables. The same is true of tacos and tortillas. And I have to ask, what would American food be like without them? Would you like to go back to a time when none of these things were available and no sushi or pad thai or falafel either? Would you? Not me. Not me. When we talk tacos and spaghetti, we're not talking apples and oranges. We're talking about history. Tacos are a marriage of new world ingredients with the old world. Maize or corn was the new world staple, to which have been added beef, pork, and chicken from Europe. Spaghetti is a marriage of Mediterranean wheat with noodle-making techniques from China, made much more interesting by adding tomatoes and chili peppers from the Americas. Every marriage is a matter of better or worse, richer or poorer. So what do we make of these marriages? Are we richer or poorer for the inclusion of tacos and spaghetti at the wedding table? For burritos, bulgogi, bratwurst, and bouillabaisse. Bouillabaisse, I love to say that. I first typed bouillabaisse without the first letter I, and my word processor sent me a warning. It knew the word, though it insisted that there must be something wrong with bulgogi. Though I'm sure you would disagree if you've had this delicious Korean specialty. Are we better or worse for all of these newcomers who bring what they have to share at our table? Are we wise to forget that most of us are relative newcomers to this part of the world? Tomorrow is Columbus Day, a national holiday only since 1934. A lot of people imagine George Washington started that one. But for many Italian Americans, it's a celebration of identity and resistance to anything less than full citizenship in this country. It's a way of saying, we may have come to this land later than some of you, but it was one of us who found it in the first place. The story of Columbus seems to give us a place of pride in the American story. This desire to have a rightful place in the world is everyone's desire, really. Who wants to be a second class or partial member of society? My family had to put up with something like that as far back as 332 BC. Mayor Joe Maturo's family did too, most likely. But did you know that many Anglo-Americans once opposed Columbus Day celebrations because they were associated with what? With Catholicism, and above all, with immigrants. Now many people have begun to celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day as an alternative to Columbus. They remind us of the long history of genocide and slavery that followed the arrival of Europeans to this land. Whatever you call it, tomorrow can be a day of struggle and resistance to the idea that we can refuse a place at the table to the oldest or the newest Americans just because of their language, religion, or appearance. Bill Shultz, former president of the UUA and Amnesty International, and now the president of the UU Service Committee, writes that we must confront those who would reserve worth to only a few and save dignity for their immediate neighbors. People like those children and grandchildren of immigrants, for example, who would not be where they are today if their forebears had been treated the way they propose to treat a new generation of Americans. Well, my word processor redlined the name Schultz, probably because it's spelled without a T before the Z. But it doesn't really dislike the name any more than it dislikes Cretella or Cari or Cillo or Maturo, any more than it dislikes tacos with lengua or tripas, excuse me, or pasta amudicata. It raises a warning that these names might not belong because they're not yet included in the program. A little work to add them in is all that's needed now. It'll take more work to do the trick with people, but so much can be done if we'll just sit down and eat together and tell our stories. That's the idea of the interfaith potlucks. We'll be having one the next time I'm in town in 2 weeks. Just sit down, eat together, and tell your stories. The work is in the preparation. The rest will be a pleasure. Maybe we first came to this land at different times, but now we are the spice of each other's life. And that is cause for celebration. Columbus Day is tomorrow. Maybe it will be Indigenous Peoples Day in the future. But the marriage feast is now. In time, I hope we'll be having so much fun with each other that we'll hardly believe it's us. But who else could it possibly be? Keep at it, friends. Ciao for now. And in a few minutes, let's chow down together at our Super Sunday lunch.